Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show. Today, Europe. We're talking the mysteries of the continent. Why Xavi took a pass at Barca. Why Haaland went to Dortmund. Why Pardew went to Holland. And is Ashley Young to Inter actually going to happen? All that and all the latest league news in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello there, listener. First Euro show of this new year, and we're joined by Alvaro Romeo.
Hello, James.
James Horncastle.
Hello.
Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
And Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
Bonjour to you, Julien.
Bonne année.
And to indeed all of you. Hurrah. It's been an exciting start to the new, to this 2020, as they're calling it. What are the big stories around the continent? Julien.
It was the PSG Monaco 3-3 on Sunday night, which was an incredible game to start 2020. And especially with PSG playing those four fantastics up front and not really going the way that Thomas Tuchel and the players themselves wanted it to.
The four fantastics, as they're known. Fantastic. Rafa?
I guess the two biggest teams dominating the storylines, as usual, Dortmund with the coup of pulling off that Erling Haaland transfer, despite plenty of other interest. Paco Alcácer still maybe going as well, so keep an eye on that. But Bayern doing the opposite, trying very hard to sign one and not really succeeding, apart from a goalkeeper who arrives next summer, but has already provided plenty of controversy this winter.
Ooh, I think I know the man you're talking about. We'll hear more about that later on. Alvaro.
It's been a really good weekend in Spain. I think so, because the Spanish Cup and the Spanish Super Cup perhaps needed a bit of a change of a format, and we have had it this weekend with the Spanish Super Cup being played in Saudi Arabia with four teams playing. I think that morally speaking, there is plenty to discuss about this move, but at the same time, perhaps the Spanish Super Cup has gained some importance from now on, especially being played in the middle of January. Real Madrid won it. And then the Spanish Cup is more interesting now, because they play to one leg instead of two legs, and that opens up a little bit the competition for smaller teams that normally don't have any chance of staying in the last 16 round.
Right, smaller teams like Unionista, who everyone's getting
for
very
example,
excited about.
Yes.
Brilliant. And of course, there's the news about Ernesto Valverde.
Yes, Ernesto Valverde has been sacked as a Barcelona manager after 2.5 years in charge of the club.
Two straight titles won as well. Yeah, had to go. Brilliant. Meanwhile, in Serie A, James?
Well, all the top sides faced each other this weekend. I think some of the games that they put on were really good value, entertaining. Juventus are winter champions, 2 points ahead of Inter after their win in Rome, and Inter's draw with Atalanta. Nicolo Zaniolo, one of the players, suffered the ACL tear and is now in doubt for the European Championships in the summer. Big blow for Roma and for Italy. And Zlatan is back, James.
No way.
First start, he's already scored as many goals from open play as Krzysztof Piątek in all of this season.
Interesting. All right, well, it's Serie A that we're going to start with, and that's after this.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Hernandez che ci arriva per prima, attenzione Ibrahimovic, il gol! Il raddoppio del Milan, la sigla è quella di Zlatan Ibrahimovic, 19esimo.
Right, Serie A. Not just Zlatan, is it?
Right, not, James, although they're talking about actually bringing that statue.
Yeah.
Which has been vandalized outside of Malmo. They're bringing it to Milan, okay. Where it'd be.
I should explain this. There's huge stories. And James, you're very, very keen to start talking about Zlatan immediately. Immediately. Go on then.
Well, yeah, because I think on the one hand, there was this fear with Zlatan. And yeah, it might still come true that he would be as disappointing as, say, Kaká was in his second spell at Milan, Shevchenko, even Ruud Gullit. And instead, in his first start, he immediately delivered. And in fact, I think made Milan... better in that they've struggled for goals from strikers all season. I mentioned that Piątek stat at the top of the show. Leao hadn't scored either since the end of September. He was their most expensive signing of the summer. And that already looks like a quite exciting strike pairing, really. You know, Zlatan interviewed afterwards, as charismatic as ever, kind of saying, is this the first step to you extending your contract, having it renewed, because it's performance related? And he was very much so, no, I have to win the title in order to do that. And I think that's going to be very hard. But I think already kind of setting new standards for Milan. It just brings that added X factor, I think, to the league, even though he is 38, becoming what, the fifth oldest goal scorer for Milan,
right,
of all time. The oldest scorer in Serie A this season at 38. And I think you probably picked up Gazzetta today, James, and saw that he was their second quickest player as well. 32 kilometres an hour was his fastest. The speed gun had him at that, behind Davide Calabria.
In the car.
He only ran 9 kilometres, but he did bust a gut on one stage.
He ran very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And he's also, what, the first player ever to score in four different decades? Or he certainly has now scored in four different decades. Because his first goal, first professional goal, was in 1999.
Although, strictly speaking, as you know, the decade hasn't actually started yet.
Why?
It's 1 to 10, 11 to 20.
Yeah. If listeners,
21 to 30.
If listeners want to find out more, Rafa will answer their questions on Twitter after.
Alvaro just explained.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, that puts that in perspective. Also, in other news,
also, you should say Milan had failed to score in the last three
games.
Very
good point. Very good point. But a 2-0 win anyway here, away to Cagliari, who have suddenly started to fall apart rather.
Yeah,
worryingly.
Four straight losses. Mm. The revelation of the first half of the season. I haven't really been able to get over that stoppage time loss to Lazio, James.
Yeah, Lazio, who keep on winning.
Winning late. It's what they do.
Right. Well, they were one of the three really big games at the top of the Italian table this weekend. They were at home to Napoli, celebrating their 120th birthday. Although it's probably their 119th, Rafa. I don't know. We'll check on that later on. And celebrating it with a late victory, thanks to an appalling a bit of play from former Arsenal goalkeeper Davide Ospina.
Yeah. Did you hear the Gary Birtle's commentary of that?
I did not. How did it go?
Ospina, get rid. Don't try and be clever. I'll be clever. Right, I've got dispossessed. He does well, Immobile. Defender's still going to do better than that. Don't put your arms around him. Sorry. I wouldn't be putting my arms around him. He's cocked it up.
So that's their 10th win in a row. That's a record.
It is. Surpasses Sven-Goran Eriksson's achievements with the title-winning side. Interestingly, for their 120th anniversary, they're also wearing the kit that they wore when they last won the league title as well. An omen, perhaps. And Simone Inzaghi was asked, you know, what does this team lack to become a title contender? And he was like, little or nothing. And
really?
I think they're legit. I really do.
They're 4 points behind Inter, who are 2 points behind Juve.
I'm pretty sure Sven-Göran Eriksson has also scored in four different decades.
Anyway, Laurie Dunsire was at the game. Laurie says, awful game. I can't believe Lazio managed to win it. Barely strung two passes together in the second half.
I think that's unfair.
But Napoli were the better side.
Were the better side in the second half. I think they had to defend very well in the opening 45 minutes, particularly the last 5 minutes before half-time, where Milinkovic-Savic kept getting in behind. They kept creating for him as well. But this is what Lazio do. You can never switch off against them. They've scored, 13 goals now in the final 15 minutes play. It's clear that they really believe, and so they should really, because in 3.5 years of Simone Inzaghi now, they've won the cup. They've won the Super Cup twice. They beat Juventus before Christmas twice within a fortnight, 3-1 on both occasions. And Immobile continues to do the extraordinary. He's got 20 goals in, 17 games, because Lazio have still got a game in hand. He is one of only, I think, four players to have scored 20 goals in four consecutive seasons in Serie A. And he's keeping, you know, very lofty company in Battistuta, Meazza and Nordahl in that. And he's on target at the moment to eclipse what Gonzalo Higuain did in his final year of Napoli, where he scored, 36 goals in a single season, which was a record. It broke a record that stood since 1950. So it's the mark of a champion that, I'm not saying that they are favourites by any means, but they deserve to be talked out of as a title contender, that they win sometimes ugly. And they did that against Cagliari, and they did it again against Napoli.
And also, they won't play in Europe anymore this season because they're out of the Europa League. And like Inter in the Europa League, so Thursday and Sunday combo. And obviously Juve with the Champions League, who can go far. So that, just a one game a week, could make a big difference.
Now, the other two big games for Juve and Inter, who were level on points coming into the round. But Juve won away at Roma, largely thanks to Roma.
Yeah.
And Inter managed to squeak a point against a rampant Atalanta side.
Yeah, I thought Inter were very lucky, particularly on the balance of play in the second half, where Atalanta completely dominated. You know, if you look at kind of possession, passes in opponent's half, passes into the penalty area, no contest whatsoever.
Shots as well, 12-3.
Well, and this is the thing, they hit the post, they hit the bar. They should have had a penalty in the first half for that Lautaro Martinez tap tackle. He could also play for the Pumas as well as the Albiceleste,
right,
I suppose. I thought Inter started the game well. First 10 or 15 minutes, Lukaku looked very good, linked the play, bullied Palomino. But Atalanta just got stronger and stronger and stronger, and Inter ended up pinned back in their own half. And yeah, they had a couple of chances towards the end, but mainly from kind of individual efforts like Brozovic with that kind of sombrero control and shot. But once again, Atalanta's failures from the penalty spot ends up costing them. This was the 11th penalty they've missed under Gasperini.
Good Lord.
And they keep trying different players. It looked like Muriel, who scored, I think, his last 10 out of 10, finally misses. And
or at least it was saved by Handanovic.
It was a great save. Handanovic now matching Gianluca Pagliuca as the goalkeeper who saved the most penalties in the history of Serie A with 24.
Right.
And Handanovic is... had to come up big for Inter on a number of occasions, particularly when they beat Lazio at home at San Siro earlier in the season. You know, again, one of those wins that I suppose now you look back on and take for granted, but Inter in the first half of that game, again, were lucky, and Handanovic had to keep them in the game. So Conte afterwards, once again, using this as an excuse to complain about his squad and how thin it is, and how, you know, if we suffer one or two injuries here, or we had one or two suspensions there, then
the club are answering his call by the looks of it. I mean, the Gazette today listing 5 or 6 names that who could well be on their way in over the January transfer window. You've got obviously Christian Eriksen, who was Arturo Vidal, Olivier Giroud. Who else is on that list?
Ashley Young,
of course.
Rakitic was there.
Rakitic was there as
Rakitic,
well.
Rakitic, I don't think will happen. I think they've got other objectives in midfield. Vidal, I think.
Kessié from Milan.
Yep. I think that's a swap deal that Milan are reluctant to do, at least at this moment in time.
What about the Ashley Young? Because that's a deal or prospective deal that has excited a lot of comment on Twitter, on social media.
Yeah, I believe that they've agreed terms with the player. They have to sort it out with Manchester United.
And why have they done that, James?
Because he's a wing-back. They play 3-5-2. I think they feel that they're short in that area, in that Lazaro, who they spent $25 million on in the summer, has had an up-and-down start to his life in Serie A. Asamoah is always injured. Cristiano Biraghi was signed because they needed someone to fill the homegrown player criterion. Again, he's been inconsistent. So I think Young is someone who they feel can certainly do a job there. And in other positions, I think Vidal's move, I think that was a priority for Conte, but it's complicated by the situation at Barcelona with the managerial change, because a new manager will come in now and basically look at, yeah, is Vidal someone who I can work with? Does he fit in our plans?
And also, if I may, Barcelona has loaned a midfielder, Carles Aleñá, to Betis. So Barcelona doesn't have as many midfielders now.
Right.
And they should keep Vidal, or it will be important for them to keep him.
Okay. What about Christian Eriksen then? Diamond Light says, where exactly would Eriksen fit into this current Inter team if he makes the switch?
Well, if you've watched Inter this season, particularly when they've got Stefano Sensi plays higher up the pitch than the other midfield players in an area where you'd expect Christian Eriksen to play as well. They've also sometimes tried to adapt how they played rather than just 3-5-2 to the 3-4-2-1 with two kind of link players behind Romelu Lukaku. That's been Alexis and Lautaro in the past. So I think there's room for Eriksen in that. I think what's interesting is that Inter, I think, initially were attracted by the opportunity Eriksen presents in that he's free in the summer. Eriksen is represented by an agent whose only client is Christian Eriksen. So in some respects, getting to the summer and pocketing a transfer fee like commission would be in his interest. But I think in some respects, Kane's injury changes that because Spurs need a striker. I think they need to bring in money for a striker. And one of the ways to do that is to bring in money from Christian Eriksen. And that's why you've seen Christoph Piontek floated as a name for Tottenham in this transfer window.
And how would you evaluate that deal were it to happen?
Well, look, a year ago, he was the hottest property in Serie A. He moved for 34 million to Milan, kept scoring when he went to Milan. He is a goal scorer, but that's all he is. You know, he is, I think, a passenger when his team don't have the ball. He is not someone who combines and links the play. I think, you know, again, in some respects, you look at Spurs' decision to sell Fernando Llorente and think that was an error. But I would also look at Piontek's motives here. I think it would appeal to Piontek, but ultimately you're going to go to a club who in April are going to play with Harry Kane again, perhaps. And how much game time are you realistically going to get? For a guy who's 24, he needs to be starting and leading a team from attack.
With their third draw anyway, with that 1-1 against Atalanta, third draw in five games.
Because they're scraping the barrel, as Conte says. They're running on vapour.
Slipping 2 points behind.
But I love my players.
Olivier Giroud is coming as well.
Yeah, Giroud will join.
Right. So is that going to happen?
Yeah.
It will happen, I think, if Chelsea lower their financial expectations. Because right now, asking for 10 million euros.
Chelsea love Conte.
Yeah, that's the
problem. So they don't want to, you know, they don't want to cause any kind of complications.
Yeah. All right. Conte, by the way, who is some way along his transformation to a late period Sophia Loren, I now realise. Have a look at the two side by side. Yeah, it's happening. But anyway, they're 2 points behind Juve now because Juve won 2-1 at Roma on a night that was disastrous for the Giallorossi and not just for the scoreline.
Yeah, I mean, they lost Nicolò Zaniolo after half an hour. A lot of comparisons drawn in the Italian papers on Monday morning with Ronaldo's injury, the original Ronaldo.
Right, Lazio.
At Lazio, when he was coming back from a knee injury. Disturbing, really, to see him so upset, in tears, and then stretch it off.
It was a strange one as well, because he went on one of his classic runs, skipping by the opposition players, and then there was contrasto, but not a particularly one. He just went down and started.
I've seen on social media some people trying to blame De Ligt and Rabiot, but I don't think they make any kind of decisive contact there. There's some speculation on Italian TV last night that he was not already going down, but the knee, let's say, blew out and then provoked him going down.
Right.
I think it's also quite interesting that Roma played on a pitch that had been played on just 24 hours beforehand because Lazio played there against Napoli. The reason why they did that is because the Italian Football Federation needs the Stadio Olimpico towards the end of the season to get it ready for the European Championships in the summer. And Diego Perotti, the Roma winger afterwards, was saying that pitch was not up to the standard of a Serie A game.
Right, and Zaniolo not the only player to suffer on it because the scorer of Juve's first goal, Demiral, also going down. Now, what's the latest on his knee? Because there was some talk of it being ACL for him as well.
Yeah, so that's been confirmed this morning. He had a scan at Juventus's bespoke medical facilities, J Medical, he will be out as well. Again, there's been some speculation on the recovery time, but you see Zaniolo's mother coming out today saying that he's desperate. He wants to be back in time for the Euros. Right. There's been a few questions to us about that. What I would say is that I'm not going to get into his recovery time, but Zaniolo only played two games in qualifying for Italy. The last two, he scored twice in the final game against Armenia, the 9-1 win. But typically in that position, we've seen Chiesa or Bernardeschi play alongside one of Belotti and Immobile, and Insigne's place on the left side has been pretty much unchallenged. I think the preoccupation for Mancini is that Bernardeschi isn't playing for Juventus, and Chiesa, his head's either been elsewhere for part of this season or he's not been playing very well. Zaniolo has.
Okay, well, best wishes to him. A couple of other little stories just before we wrap things up for Italy. One is lovely to see Claudio Ranieri.
Oh, yeah.
Roaring clear of the relegation zone with a massive 5-1 win at the weekend over Brescia with Sampdoria.
They'd scored only 6 goals at home in the league all season. They get 5 after going behind against Brescia as well. And Ranieri's done a very good job there. He took over when they were bottom of the table. They're now 5 points clear. And I think since he's been in charge, the only team that have got more clean sheets than them in Europe's top 5 leagues is Real Madrid. So it's very much kind of back to basics, 4-4-2, even though they had suspensions at the back yesterday. So they had to play a full-back, Vasco Regini as a centre-back, and Chabot, this young, I think, German, there as well. He's got Quagliarella scoring again, because Quagliarella wasn't scoring under Di Francesco. And yeah, Ronaldo Vieira as well, the England under-21 international, practically playing every game all season and doing well. There's been interest from some Premier League clubs to bring him back here, but I think he's very much enjoying his time there. So yeah, things going well at the moment for Sam, really turn things around. If they'd taken some of their chances, Gabbiadini, for example, against Milan last week in 0-0, could be even better.
But still doing pretty good. Fabrizio Miccoli then.
Oh, what's happened with Miccoli? I haven't seen this. I've been away.
So he's finally been... Do you remember this story?
Oh,
from,
yeah, with the mafia.
Well, yeah, with the mafia, yeah. So this is the Ronaldo of the Salento.
Yes, yep. Who also bought one of Diego Maradona's earrings.
Oh, did he?
Didn't he? And he wore that, yeah.
Miccoli, who came through at Lecce, had a great spell at Perugia, went to Juve... And
got Modjid and then ended up at Benfica.
He went to Portugal, Palermo as well at the end of his career.
Well, yeah, Palermo I think is where people remember him. Yeah.
Right.
He played so well in there, I remember.
He's brilliant. But he had some dangerous liaisons, didn't he? That was the thing.
So this was a story actually from 2017 where it turned out that he had got, Mauro Laricella, who's the son of one of the Palermitano bosses, Calza Antonino, who's known as Ucintuluni, it says here, because of his passion for elegant clothing.
Right.
Ucintuluni. Anyway, so he got the son of Ucintuluni to apply pressure in some delicate manner on a person who hadn't paid a friend of his some money. And the son of Ucintuluni has been sent down for violence. And now Miccoli, who was actually found guilty back in 2017... The decision's been finally confirmed, 3 years in jail.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, this practically ended his career because Palermo decided, that's enough, we're done with you. And as with all of these investigations, I think Italy is one of the most wiretap countries on the planet, if not the most wiretapped. And I think one of them, I think they were driving past a memorial to...
Yeah, he's walking past Falcone's old house, actually.
Yeah.
And he makes a comment, a disparaging comment about the famous anti-mafia,
which procuratore. Was kind of, that's it, mate. Sorry, you're out of here.
Yeah, all right then.
Go watch his goals on YouTube, though. They're stunning.
They are. They are magnificent. All right, well, loads more excitement to come. Got a question about Verona. We maybe will touch on that later in their wonky lines.
Mm-hmm.
But up next... France.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Excludes shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Keita Baldé encore, Keita Baldé à l'assaut de la DAC parisienne. Le ballon pour Wissam Ben Yedder. Wissam Ben Yedder qui fait la différence encore sur sa prise de balle. Et après 13 minutes dans ce match, il laisse Monaco maintenant.
Okay, Jules, let's get some French drama.
Oh yeah.
Big game this weekend, PSG taking on Monaco. Monaco's new manager, Roberto Moreno, hang on. Isn't he the guy who we last saw in tears?
Yes.
Didn't he betray Luis Enrique?
Yes. Betraying Luis Enrique with the Spanish national team. What's going on there?
Yes, and when the news broke, it was the 28th of December that he was going to sign for Monaco.
Right.
We all thought that it was a joke because the 28th of December in Spain is the equivalent of the April Fool's Day here in the UK.
Why? Why, Álvaro?
We commemorate what King Herod was doing to children.
Right.
And basically, the innocents are the children that Herod killed.
Right. So you exploit those are the innocents of people, perhaps. Maybe not. But anyway, but it turned out to be absolutely true that Roberto Moreno has now taken over from Leonardo Jardim.
Yes, exactly. Jardim, who got a second check,
yes,
paycheck, obviously, for being sacked,
wow,
twice in a year. The first one was just over 8 million euros. The second one a year later was just below 8 million euros. It's still a good, like, 16 million euros.
Did they not just keep him on gardening leave, like the Italian style?
Well, that would be ironic, because his name is literally Garden.
That would have been great. But no, we don't do that in Monaco and not so much in France. So Jardim out of the door, and then we thought for a long time that Marcelino, the former Valencia manager, was going to be the one. But Petrov, the Monaco sporting director, or like vice president, whatever, who runs the club, decided to go for Robert Moreno, despite his lack of experience, because he's never been a number one manager in a club. Only he had that good spell with Spain, with 7 wins and 2 draws in the 9 games, you know, after Luis Enrique and before Luis Enrique as well. But it was a bit of a risk, and he's done extremely well so far.
How did his first game go, Jules?
So they won in the cup, in the French Cup, against Reims 2-1. And that was a bit... We could see the intention of how they wanted to play, and he's very much, because he was also Luis Enrique's assistant at Barcelona, and he's Catalan, this is very much the idea and the philosophy, is to play with a lot of possession and a high press. Although that win against Reims was a bit... was not the most convincing. And then it was that trip to Paris at the Parc des Princes against PSG, where I think a lot of people thought that Monaco would get absolutely battered by Paris, and instead they drew 3-3 and they played really well. He started with the team in 4-3-3 formation and very quickly changed to a 4-4-2 to exploit all the spaces left by PSG, and they did really well. They could have probably even won the game. They had enough chances. They could have lost it as well, because PSG created a lot, but it was a very interesting one on Monaco's side. They're now 8th in the table, and clearly the only way is up, and Moreno already in just the space of 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, has changed a lot of things.
All right. Talking of the spaces in behind with PSG, they were lining up with a 4-2-4 so they could get Di Maria, Mbappe, Neymar, and the other
Icardi.
One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Icardi.
How can you forget Icardi?
Mauro Icardi. And Mauro Icardi in there. Now, I presume that following this draw, and indeed them conceding 3 goals at home for the first time in nearly 10 years, there's a lot of people asking about the wisdom of trying to stick all four of them up front together.
Yeah, and this is the debate that will continue between now and the first leg against Borussia Dortmund in a month. And this is also the debate that we've had for the last 2 weeks on, can Tuchel actually do that in those big games? The players keep saying, and Neymar being the first one on Sunday night as well on French television, saying, yeah, we can play in Europe like that with the four of us. Obviously, it's pretty obvious that it's quite an unbalanced team then, because you're left with only Verratti and Gay defending when you lose the ball. And even if you ask Neymar and Di Maria and Icardi and Mbappe to try to defend a little bit and make the runs and or press or things like that, they're not naturally do it. So the question is, can Tuchel actually do it? And last night, again on Sunday night on French television, he was saying, like, I never said this was the answer. You French media have said he's found the right formula. He can play with those four fantastics, because PSG beat Saint-Etienne 4-0 and 6-1 in 2 games. But Tuchel said, I never said that I was going to play like that against Dortmund. And I think he knows, and even if it would be hard for him to pick one of those four to drop on the bench, he knows that if he plays like this against Dortmund over the 2 legs, they might just be knocked out, because they leave too much space. They concede too many chances. Monaco had 14 shots on Sunday night, which is the most PSG has faced in like years and years. So I don't know if he will be bold enough to try it. It can work, and they can win 4-3 and 5-2, for example, for all I know, against Dortmund. But you could also lose 3-2 each time, and then you say, well, you know, we told you not to play like that. So it's a tricky one, but you could see why he wants them four to play together.
Zeman-esque. It's fantastic.
It is. But Neymar was incredible on Sunday night. He really had one of those games where he was almost unplayable.
5 points now, the gap between leaders PSG and their nearest rivals, Marseille, who are on a wonderful run. 25 points from a possible 27, unbeaten in 8, under that man Andre Villas-Boas. Kevin Strootman coming on and scoring the winner away at Rennes.
It's a game that should have finished 0-0, and AVB said it after the game. They should not have won it, but Strootman was very opportunistic. It was a free kick by Payet that hit the post, and Strootman was there, hadn't touched the ball since coming on a couple of minutes earlier, and scored the winner. And right now, everything is just going Marseille's way. And in many respects, they deserve it, because they've worked really hard, and AVB have them well organized and structured with a lot of energy and intensity. And even when you win those games that should finish in a draw, usually, it shows that you're on the right way. And what's interesting, PSG have a game in hand, which is on Wednesday.
Against? Monaco.
In Monaco. So this is the second leg of that game against Moreno and Monaco. And then Leicester PSG lose that one. You know, it's a 5-point gap with Marseille. And then it's almost
realistically, I mean, PSG are not going to lose this title.
No, but I don't think so. But it's interesting.
It is interesting. What I was also curious to see was the fact that there's a big and very, very fancy new TV deal in place for the French League for next season, which might see a little bit more competition for the title. How big is it? How does it compare to the other European leagues?
Richer?
He would make PSG richer. They will also make the other teams richer, which is interesting. Yeah, it's gone over the billion for the TV rights, which is very good. And you hope that teams like Lyon and Marseille, Monaco as well, and Bordeaux, those kind of teams, will use that money to invest. Some clubs, not as big maybe, I've already sort of anticipated, a bit like what club do in the Championship in England, hoping that they go up, and those hoping that they can build on good results and for when that money comes in. But I think it's a good time. The league is shaping well for 2020, really. And when Lyon, for example, played really well on Saturday against Bordeaux and won that game with Rudy Garcia, will not sell Dembele and Toussaint, one to an English club and the other one to Hertha Berlin. And they've got another young player called Maxence Cacré, who's only 19 from the academy, who's looking very, very good as well in midfield. So in Lyon and in Marseille and in Monaco as well, and with Paris, things are starting to get into places, and it's interesting.
Jules, I know you're keen to talk about the team that's bottom of the table, Toulouse, who have now lost 11 games in a row.
Indeed, 10 in the league and one in the cup, and they were 2-1 up in the 72nd minute against Brest at the weekend, and they conceded 4 goals in 18 minutes to lose the game 5-2.
What's interesting as well to
lose the game is that just before Christmas they had a game, and two of the players were caught watching the Clásico on their phones on the bench, which is quite unusual, really, when they were playing at Lyon, and one of the Lyon fans was sat in the stands and at some point looked towards the Toulouse bench and could see two of their players with the phones between them and the Clásico literally live on the phone, and they were watching the Clásico on the bench instead of watching their team being beaten by Lyon. So they got suspended for a little bit, and now they're back in the team. But it's quite a funny story. Just nothing is going for Toulouse at the moment.
Dan Atkin wants to know, he says, my club, Sheffield United, have been strongly linked with Adrien Tamez
from Nice.
Okay, what can you tell us about him?
He hasn't played much this season. He's a very physical and energetic defensive midfielder who's good on the ball. He's interesting because he could have gone to Spartak Moscow a year ago, and Nice were happy to sell him. The money was good and he decided to stay. And then it didn't really work out for him this season. But he would be a good addition to the way Sheffield United are playing. I think he's got all that energy and that intensity in his game that could fit what they're playing like at the moment.
Very nice. Okay, up next we'll hear about the craziness going on currently in Catalonia.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Barcelona won the last two Liga titles, top of the league. Let's change manager, they say in Catalonia. So off they went to see Xavi and his club Al Sadd over the Christmas period and offered him Valverde's job, Álvaro.
That's true, and that's the way it is. And it's happened. It's funny that it happened when Barcelona did one of their best games in the season. However, they lost 3-2 against Atletico de Madrid, despite having deserved.
This was in the Super Cup in Saudi Arabia.
Yes, it was the semi-final of the Spanish Super Cup, which this year it's been played by 4 teams. Then Barcelona lost that game against Atletico de Madrid, and the day after Messi saying, "We still trust in our manager." Abidal and another representative of Barcelona traveled to Qatar to see allegedly Ousmane Dembélé, who is recovering from his injury there in Qatar, and they also met Xavi Hernández. It was the Catalan media RACU who reported all this, and from that moment on, speculations started. Xavi apparently was very flattered by the offer, but he said not yet, because he's involved with his team, and they've got a final on Friday. Then Ronald Koeman was also asked about whether he wants to go to Barcelona or not. He said not yet either, because he is the Dutch manager and he obviously will command his team in the Eurocup. And then the other one, according to RACU again, this Catalan media that has probably the best contact Mauricio Pochettino is another candidate that Barcelona board is pondering at the minute.
And presumably he is too, because he'd said previously, hadn't he, that he would never join Barcelona, being a former Espanyol man?
Yes, he said that. And he said that repeatedly, a few times. Going for so many candidates, and some of them are slightly different, proves as well and shows you that Barcelona doesn't have a sporting director yet. So they don't know exactly who do they want and the profile of manager that they want to have to succeed Ernesto Valverde. All that said, the fact that the club has let all these stories leaked, leave Valverde in a very bad place, probably the club hasn't been respectful enough with the manager who has won two leagues. And on Monday, they had a meeting to resolve Valverde's future. As we record, the word is that Ernesto Valverde is going to be sacked as Barcelona manager.
Yes, finally, yes.
And that's Jules, who's not a Valverde fan, Jules.
Never will. I mean, he came in and did an okay job in a club in crisis and won a couple of leagues and stuff. But he's destroyed Barca's style of football, destroyed Frankie de Jong's game this season. I mean, it's just, I think he was a bad manager. He was never fitting the Barca DNA and all of that.
Jules is one of those international fans who's only seen the Champions League games, you know, the famous one.
I watched far too much
Roma won.
Barcelona.
Yeah. I agree with some of that.
Thank you.
Some of that. Barcelona won the... When Valverde signed as a Barcelona manager, Neymar and Iniesta played in that club.
Right.
And Neymar left like 6 weeks after he signed.
Right.
And Valverde probably were doing his plans about having the... MSN up front to start with, and he invented something which was playing with 4-4-2, forgetting about the left flank, giving Jordi Alba all that flank. And Barcelona won the title that year, and they lost the first game on the 13th of May. Some other clubs that we all know who they are have made a narrative about an unbeaten season. Barcelona wouldn't do it because they have won many Champions League, so they don't have to. But that was a tremendous achievement. Then the second season, they won the league as well.
Right.
But with the first season, they won it with 90-something points. The second season with 80-something points. And this season, if they double up their tally now, they will collect only 80 points.
Okay.
So Valverde's Barcelona relied on regularity in La Liga, and this season they are not having it despite topping the table.
Right.
But it's not the Liga that's the issue.
Is it the Champions League?
It's really
The Champions League is obviously the main target for Barcelona, the main target for Messi as well. Valverde got, obviously, the trust from the board because he was winning La Liga. But what happened in Anfield left a very strong mark in him and Philippe Coutinho, and in Rome as well. And obviously, if Barcelona this season was worse than last season and the previous season, his name was going to be, obviously, in danger. And I understand that he has been sacked. There are a few things that Valverde hasn't done well. Number one, the style, as you say, is not as good as it was before. Academy players haven't been promoted. And Barcelona has lost the eagerness to produce heavy wins, which is something that they had under Luis Enrique and under Guardiola as well. Barcelona, as soon as they have the 2-0 or the 1-0, they are satisfied. And that has been the problem. In La Liga, that is enough, because normally it's difficult that teams beat you if you score first, if you are Barcelona and you score first. But in Champions League, that doesn't happen. And that has been Barcelona's main problem. The same regularity that they have in La Liga is not enough in European competition.
Right. Okay, so they've decided that he's no longer the man for them because they only want the very, very best. What makes them so convinced that Xavi, whose managerial experience is pretty limited so far, is going to be that best?
Well, because they don't know what to do. They don't have a sporting director.
Right.
Therefore, they don't have a direction. They tried to go for Xavi Hernandez. Xavi said no. By the way, Xavi is not friends with this sporting team, and Barcelona's board is not friends with Bartomeu. In fact, Xavi was going to be the manager of one of the candidates to be Barcelona president after the elections in 2021, but he wasn't Bartomeu's candidate for the next elections. And then Ronald Koeman, they just want to try to sign him because he belonged to Barcelona in the past, but there is no any reason behind that. Obviously, Barcelona needs a manager for the rest of the season. They cannot rely on the second manager because that happened in 2014 or 2013 when Jordi Roura took the job of Tito Vilanova for different reasons, and that didn't happen. This is a team that is very used to the complacency of the players, and they need a real manager. They don't need a second manager managing them.
Is this going to cost them the title?
Potentially, yes, and especially given that Real Madrid is doing so well now. Messi can win many games on his own, but he cannot win a competition on his own. I'm sure that Lionel Messi will have a say on who Barcelona signs because his contract expires in 2021.
Okay.
But he can trigger his release from Barcelona in 2020, in June, if he is not happy with what Barcelona offers him or right. presents him as a player.
Okay. Amidst all of this, Luis Suarez, the club is saying that he's going to be out for 4 months. He'll be 33 before he comes back, Álvaro.
Yes, and apparently he's out for 4 months yes. after undergoing knee surgery. He had surgery on the same knee about 9 months ago before Copa America started. And, well, now this opens up plenty of possibilities for Barcelona. I wouldn't be surprised if they go to for a striker in the market.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, last summer, in January. Yeah, yeah.
Who
to replace Luis Suarez. Well, thing is, not having a sporting director is very difficult to guess or just to imagine who Barcelona could sign, because last winter they signed Kevin Prince-Boateng,
right.
for instance, a player who had a very marginal performance at right. Barcelona. He only played a couple of cup games.
Okay, when's Ousmane Dembele back then?
Ousmane Dembele will be back in February,
okay.
as far as I can
Fanti's
remember.
There. They've got yeah. Griezmann, of course, who could play more centrally.
I was going to say that.
Okay.
That this is a good chance for Antoine Griezmann to play as a striker. He played like that for Atletico de Madrid for a number of years, and he's suited to the position. Obviously, Luis Suarez had scored 14 goals this season already, and that's going to be very difficult to replace. But at the same time, there are so many things to address at Barcelona that maybe this Luis Suarez thing is the smallest of all of them.
Now, you mentioned the Super Cup, which took place in Saudi Arabia, Real Madrid winning against Atletico Madrid in the final on penalties. Perhaps more heartwarming fare to be found in the Copa del Rey, second round of which took place this weekend, and Unionistas de Salamanca. Managed to put out former champions Deportivo La Coruña. Why does everyone love Unionistas so much?
Well, this is a new club. Doesn't belong to the old Salamanca.
Mm.
That team was dissolved and liquidated in 2013. And this is a team made by fans and with some good sponsors, like the likes of Vicente del Bosque,
okay.
who
wanted
to put some money into that.
So they've got a tiered system of fan participation, whereby mm-hmm. the more money you pay, the more you can enjoy the, you know,
it's
the
like Real Oviedo.
Yeah. Very possibly, actually.
Literally yeah. like that, yeah. It's,
but they started in the sixth division and already made it up to the third in the space of, what, about 7 years?
Yes. At the minute, it's very interesting because there are more third-tier clubs than second-tier clubs,
okay.
thanks to this format in which they play to one leg until the semi-final. The semi-final is two legs,
right.
and then the final is one leg again. So they blend a little bit the FA Cup and the Carabao Cup to create an innovative cup format that, obviously, I think that we have to be grateful in Spain for this to the Spanish FA, because the Cup had lost a lot of interest in the past because the same teams were winning it every time. I think that since 2007 only the Big Five have won it: Real Madrid, Atletico, Barcelona, Valencia and Sevilla. And this will at least create a little bit more of turmoil and probably nervousness among big teams, because they cannot definitely not anymore play the first leg with a weak team and then get the business done back at home in the second leg.
I see. All right. Anything else about La Liga and Spanish football before we move on, Álvaro?
Yes, of course. Real Madrid is the winner of the Super Cup, and that has to be said.
All right.
Yeah.
Well done, them.
I know. I have to say something.
Another
about
classic.
No, but Zinedine Zidane has won one title every 19 games as a Real Madrid manager.
Good lord!
He's won every final, no? Nine out of nine.
Every final.
Right.
And well, Real Madrid in summer didn't look good, and we spoke about it, and we said that they didn't have enough midfielders, and we said that the squad was not big enough, and I don't know if it's good enough to beat Manchester City in Champions League. I really don't know that yet, but they haven't lost since October, and many players who looked casted away, the likes of Isco, for example, they are back and they are playing good football. There is a new addition, Fede Valverde, who is all together with Martin.
Cynical tacklings, yeah.
Queda suelta, atención para que corra Morata, que buen control orientado, Morata. Bueno. Cartulina roja para Fede Valverde.
That tackle was terrible, but won the game for Real Madrid, effectively. Yeah. A little bit like the handball of Luis Suarez against Ghana.
Yeah. It made him a hero, though, no?
Yeah.
Isn't
yes.
it like, it felt so Real Madrid, that tackle, red card, Ramos winning penalty.
Yeah.
It was just like, those are the bastards I love.
Sergio Ramos as well, who I'm sure, although he denies it, was the fifth penalty taker. When he realised that it would not go to fifth, but that the fourth penalty taker, because of how many Atletico had missed, would take it and score it and win it for Real Madrid. you could see him talking to Mariano and say like, I know I'm going. And then he obviously goes, scores the winner, then celebrate like Cristiano and all of that.
He got the glory, yeah.
Trippier was the only Atletico player to score his penalty.
Yeah, oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Atletico were awful in the penalty shootout. And right. Jan Oblak, as it happened in Champions League 2016, didn't save a single penalty either. He's a great goalkeeper, but in the penalty shootout, he hasn't been able to produce.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Rafa.
Hello,
hello.
I'm still here.
Yeah, you are here, all tanned and relaxed.
Yeah, it was hard work. It was hard work. Lots of driving around
on your hog.
Oh, no, no, in a car, in a rental car.
Okay.
For context, Rafa came into a leather jacket looking like Negan from The Walking Dead.
Seeing your tan.
And he just parked his motorcycle outside.
Your imagination.
Seeing your tan, you clearly had a lot of time to sunbathe as well.
Okay, so the Bundesliga is on a break. And pretty much all 18 clubs have headed down to Spain.
Mm. Well, Spain was number one destination for German clubs. Especially Costa del Sol, very, very popular. Dortmund were in the Bay, Hoffenheim and Düsseldorf were in the Bay as well. Schalke were near Murcia and Gladbach were in Jerez, next to the former racing course of Formula One. There's lots of motorcycles now going on that race course, so a lot of in the background, even when they were
testing.
When they were playing, yeah. And yeah, lots of clubs from Holland as well. The Belgians were there. Everyone seemed to descend on southern Spain. And it was a pretty good idea because the weather was stunning. There's always a certain sense of, yes, we're working hard, but at least we're doing it in a nice space rather than at home where it's cold and rainy and stuff. So players, I think, are a little bit happier going away in these sort of circumstances. If they can't be at home, at least they're in an interesting place. And it proved quite productive, I think, for one or two of these clubs. The interesting thing, I think, was that Dortmund almost sort of made it their transfer window and their January because of the Haaland deal.
Right.
And you could see Michael Zorc, the sporting director, for a week he basically did not stop smiling. Walking around the Marbella, just really, really happy with what they had achieved.
Neither did Mino.
Probably not. And Haaland had his first game time as well. He played against Mainz, I think, for a half. I didn't see that game. I was flying back. But yeah, Dortmund are really, really happy that they've got him.
What about Weigl as well? Weigl's gone.
Yeah, I mean, €20 million for Weigl is another reason, I think, why Zorc was running around with a big smile. Mm. He was mostly being played as a centre-back by Lucien Favre, which is, I don't think, his best position.
Right.
And I hope that he can resurrect his career a little bit because he was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago seen as one of the possible heirs to Toni Kroos or, you know, Bastian Schweinsteiger in the central midfielder for Germany. Really cultured player. Under Thomas Tuchel, he played some really amazing stuff. He was linked with Man City for obvious reasons because he is very much a Pep player, or he was at his pomp. So it'd be nice to see him rediscover some of that form. But yeah, Dortmund have had a very good window, but in a sense, it's also increased the pressure on Favre because he's only had 30 points in the first half of the season. If they do the same thing again, they get nowhere near winning the league, which was their stated target this season. It might not even be enough to get into the Champions League because they've got Schalke and others breathing down their neck. So this sort of uncomfortable truce or just sort of, you know, we're continuing with Favre because we don't really know who else to go for, will continue with even more pressure in the second half of the season.
They're currently lying in fourth place, as you say, on 30.7 off the top. Is Haaland enough to make a difference?
I think it'll make a difference up front because it almost forces Favre to play a little bit differently. You know, Dortmund, they approach in a very specific manner. They play the ball around, they sort of create little triangles, they overload certain areas, and then they play and play and play, and they will only take shots once they're actually in front of goal. So in a way, it's a very controlled, almost tiki-taka-esque way of playing, which when it works is beautiful. When it doesn't, it gets the crowd a little bit annoyed because they want more oomph. They want people in the box, they want crosses coming in. Before Haaland's arrival, there was no point to cross for anyone because Paco Alcácer is not a guy who's going to score lots of goals with his head. That's even when he's on the pitch, he's had lots of injury problems. Without him, it's either been Götze or Hazard, Thorgan Hazard, that is, or Royce playing as a false nine. And I think it's almost, that's my reading of the situation, that by buying Haaland, Dortmund, as represented by the board, are basically trying to twist Favre's arm a little bit and say, you know what, we have the centre forward now. You need to play him and the team need to play for him. I think it'll make a difference, but the bigger issue for Dortmund is that the defence has been absolutely disastrous. They just cannot control the game. They cannot control oppositions without the ball. And unless they really sharpen up in that sense, I don't see them getting anywhere near Leipzig and Bayern.
Bayern, who have now acquired the services of Alexander Nübel.
Well, not yet.
Have they not?
No. They've signed him, but he will arrive in the summer.
Okay, what does this mean for Manuel Neuer?
Well, that's exactly the interesting question. I mean, Nübel comes on a free deal. He's out of contract in the summer. Bayern and Schalke have announced the deal. Schalke very, very upset in the press statement and said, well, we accept the decision, but we don't understand it. Meow. So they feel that, you know, as a captain, he's now actually lost his armband because of that decision, but the former captain, I should say, he was going to be the face of this new Schalke under David Wagner that's emerging, that's starting to sort of, living a renaissance, if you will. But he's gone, or he will be gone, and it creates a problem for Schalke, but it also, ironically, creates a problem for Bayern, because Manuel Neuer, who's out of contract in 2021, and who was, I think, pretty decided that he was going to stay, pending one or two things like who's the new manager, for example, going forward, now have a guy there who will not be prepared to just wait around forever for Neuer to step down. I don't think Neuer wants to step down. He's given some very aggressive interviews saying, the fact that Nübel comes, for me, does not matter at all. And this kind of stuff. So,
Bayern have been very protective of him vis-a-vis the German national team as well.
Exactly. Well, overprotective, I think you might say. So unless there's a kind of clear arrangement with Nübel that you'll have to buy this time and have to just simply wait, it will cause some friction. There was even a story during the rounds which Bayern have very strongly denied that Nübel has a clause in his contract guaranteeing him a certain amount of games. Now, the one thing you can say which maybe justify this decision, or maybe two things, is one, that Nübel is very much the next big thing, apart from Ter Stegen, who's probably the best goalkeeper already at the moment, and that Manuel Neuer has missed quite a few games over the last few years. And whenever he hasn't been there, Sven Ulreich, his deputy, you remember that game against Real Madrid where he really
Benzema's goal.
Didn't do very well at all. A cantada, not named after Oliver Kahn, but the Spanish expression for a papera, a goalkeeping blunder. So they'll definitely have an upgrade on him, but maybe at the cost of having disharmony in the dressing room.
Crikey. Although sometimes that can be a good thing. You can have too much harmony in the dressing room. Nübel, for those of us who know him for that Schumacher-esque challenge against Frankfurt, is he actually a good keeper?
He is a good keeper. I mean, that challenge was very bad, and he's been rightly suspended for a few weeks for that. But yeah, I mean, he was already close to signing for Bayern last year. But I think they ultimately decided that they could wait a year and take him for free. It's a sort of classic Bayern ploy, if you will. And one of the reasons why, opposition teams aren't always overly enamored with their dealings in the transfer market. But yeah, it's worked out well in a financial sense. They certainly won't lose any money on him. He's certainly going to be a hot prospect going forward. But the question is, how can they pacify the very ambitious Manuel Neuer?
Just to go back on Haaland.
They could play him in midfield, perhaps.
Yeah, that's an opportunity. That's a possibility.
Why not RB Leipzig then? And why? What was the key thing that made him?
Mino?
Could it be Mino and the commission for agents?
I mean, if you speak to the people close to him in Norway, they say that ultimately, financially, it didn't really make much difference where they would have gone. The money was more or less the same at all these places. Leipzig, I think, on paper would have paid a little bit less, but he might have then had a nice sponsorship deal with Red Bull. being the testimonial and holding up cans in his free time. So I think the money wouldn't really would have been more or less the same everywhere. And I think I believe them when they say, you know what, out of all the prospects in a pure sporting and maybe emotional sense, Dortmund just seemed the most attractive. I think, first of all, they could offer him something that the others couldn't, which is, you're going to be the main focal point of our attack. You're not going to be the guy next to Timo Werner. You're not going to be the guy next to Marcus Rashford or Ronaldo or, you know, Higuain or Dybala. You're going to be the guy and we'll all play for you. And you'll do that at a club with 80,000 people and, you know, huge emotions and a real chance to win a title that will mean more at that club than perhaps at some of the others where they've been more blessed with recent success. Of course, that doesn't necessarily explain why he didn't go to Leipzig, because some of those factors exist there as well. I think ultimately the answer was the one I was given, is that he just felt like more a bigger pull by Dortmund, having never played for a, you know, for sort of a blue chip club with a big following. I think it just felt a little bit sexier. Although as a pure sporting proposition, you might have said that Leipzig actually have a better opportunity to win something in the immediate future, and the Nagelsmann have probably a better coach, especially when it comes to helping forwards to improve. Yeah. But I guess, and again, it's something that you sort of pick up, is Dortmund and Haaland maybe already looking beyond Favre and see what will happen after that.
Very shortly, we'll be looking at some of your Twitter questions. Thanks for those. And also hearing what Alan Pardew's up to now. Woof. First, though, here comes Paddy Power with producer Ben.
Merci beaucoup, Jimbo. Hello, listeners. It's time to talk Euro odds with Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, let's start with Germany. Dortmund have, of course, signed Erling Brut Haaland. Will they be lifting the Bundesliga trophy come the end of the season?
They've got big Erling Haaland, but they've got little hope in terms of the title, according to the numbers anyway. Our odds put them third in the betting, one place higher than the Bundesliga standings, at 10-1 to win the league. Leaders Leipzig are ahead of them at 21-10, while third place Bayern, who are 4 points behind Red Bull, are our odds-on favourites to win the Bundesliga at 4-9, while Gladbach, who are second and just 2 points off top spot, are 22-1 to be German champions.
Over to Serie A, where Zlatan is off the mark again at Milan. How many goals will he have scored come the end of the campaign?
Well, now he's off the mark, we're back in Zlatan to get quite a few. It's evens, so effectively 50-50, that he gets to double figures and scores 10 or more Serie A goals. It's 11-4, he scores 12 or more in the league. And 11-1, he hits 15 or more. And that really would be lion energy.
And finally, Lee, over to Spain, where Julen Lopetegui goes back to the Bernabeu with Sevilla this weekend. What's going to happen when they face Real Madrid?
Yeah, awkward. Last time Lopetegui faced Real, his side lost 1-0. And we don't think they'll do any better this time either. A Madrid win is odds on at 8-15, with Sevilla 4-1 outsiders. Or you can get 13-10, they avoid defeat. That bet is called double chance in our markets. The draw here is 16-5, and another 1-0 win to Real Madrid is 15-2.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. When the fun stops, stop. Guy Fraser wants to know, who's this guy Norwich have signed from Hertha? And also, says Guy, what are the optics for the Cotroni-Fiorentina deal to be permanent? Thanks.
It is a two-year loan.
Yes.
But Fiorentina have to buy him after...
Oh.
Well, it's actually 18 months because it happened in January. So they will buy him for an established fee of 16 million euro.
So they have to buy him?
Yeah. There's been some speculation.
So essentially
as to
they bought him.
Yeah, it's a way of...
You just paying 18
months. Yeah, so he came on at the weekend. He almost scored a delightful back heel. Has made this move with the Euros in mind because clearly he wasn't playing as much as he aspired to at Wolves. So part of a very young forward line at Fiorentina, if you discount Frank Ribery with Dusan Vlahovic and Federico Chiesa.
Meanwhile, who is it that Norwich have signed from Hertha Berlin, Rafa?
They have signed a 25-year-old attacking midfielder, Slovakian international.
Andrej Duda.
Yeah. Goes by the nickname of Little Artist. I'm not sure how real that name is. I mean, Pa Dada, I mentioned it once, I think, in a press conference.
Okay.
He's a number 10.
Right.
The sort of player that would fit into Norwich's system, you know, be good in link up, playing behind a striker, taking up interesting positions and pockets of space, da da da. What he hasn't done has really been convincing this season. Only 7 games, I think 1 assist, no goals, very much surplus to requirements under Klinsmann's new regime. So yeah, whether he'll be sort of enough to make the real difference for Norwich in a relegation battle, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. In the meantime, Steve Malanga would like to know how soon or how long before a big German club comes for Ralf Hasenhüttl.
Well, Hasenhüttl, after his first season at Leipzig, was very much a thing, and I think was somebody that Bayern looked at the time and Dortmund as well. Then his second season didn't go nearly as well, and I think that's why, in inverted commas, he only got the Southampton job. But because he's doing really well, I think, again, he'll be coming into contention fairly soon.
Right.
It seems that he had only one way of playing at Leipzig, and whoever they were playing against, remember how we used to do it a lot on EFS, it was just like...
Press, press, press.
Yeah, it was just one thing. It seemed that maybe...
He tried to change in his second season, and some people at Leipzig said, well, the problem that they had in the second season was they had actually moved away from some of the pressing game. They tried to be more possession-oriented, but they lost the aggressiveness and the ability to win the ball back quickly in the process. And then Rangnick came in and turned the clock back, and they were again playing that pressing game. So I think with better players, he can play football. And Southampton have played some good football in possession as well.
Yeah. All right. Anike asks, will Adama Traore make Spain's Euro squad?
It's a possibility. Okay. It is, yeah, because Robert Moreno tried to cap him in October or November, I don't remember when, and then Adama Traore picked an injury and he couldn't play for Spain, but it is a possibility because there are many places up for grabs up front. Morata, Oyarzabal and perhaps Sarabia are the only ones who more or less seem to be sure in that final squad, and Adama Traore has a chance, definitely.
Okay. Joe Misselmeller says, 1-4 James, what's behind Verona's rise up the table?
Well, it's quite astonishing, really, because Ivan Juric, well, let's look at Sunday's game, shall we? The 2-1 win against Genoa, a side that sacked Juric 3 times. And he was only ever good for beating Juventus. That's all he did. And he got this job, and some people were quite surprised that he got it because he didn't come up with Verona. They sacked the guy who got them up in the playoffs. They'd sacked Fabio Grosso just before the playoffs. And the only player they signed for money was Rachmani, the centre-back. The rest were all loans or done very cheaply. And they are a mini Atalanta insofar as Juric is a disciple of his, played under him for a long time. They play with the kind of same aggression and have really been able to get performances out of no-name players. I think they're one of those teams which knew that if they were to stay up, they had to all group together and be greater than the sum of their parts. I think there's a humility there which has allowed them to succeed where maybe some of the other promoted teams haven't. But they're 8th.
Yeah. They're, what, 4 points off a potential Europa League
spot? Yeah, and they've played really hard against all of the big sides. Were it not for the fact that, they've... occasionally been involved in some racist incidents, some of their fans, I think they would be talked of as more of a feel-good story.
Right.
Were Juric a little bit less drab than he is?
They did have a bit of colour this weekend, though, when their match kicked off 15 minutes late.
Yes, they did, because the referee, the match officials were inspecting the pitch and found that the lines for the penalty area were wonky and needed repainting.
Right, have they been done by the same people who do Stockley Park's VAR?
Possibly. Verona, in some respects people...
How do they get rid of the old line? What did they do with the old line? Do they wash it off or something?
Yeah, you wash it off.
You can wash it off?
Yeah.
So somebody came on with a mop.
And then you've got that machine that usually stays straight, to be fair. But...
They got Diego Maradona in.
Naughty. Right. Okay. Guy Lecon says, lots of speculation linking Allegri with a Man United job. Is there any truth? He's waiting to get the United job. What would he bring to Old Trafford, etc. and so on. Allegri to Man United? Or is he being kept for next season at Milan?
Well, I interviewed Allegri in December.
Yes.
And he was very... he cut us short when we asked him about whether he would take a job between now and the end of the season. He said in June, and in June only. Mm. Seems to be really kind of enjoying his time out of the game. I've been told by kind of friends of his that of the clubs in England that appeal to him, United is definitely one. It's certainly in terms of profile and status on a similar level to where Milan were when he took over there, and Juventus, of course. I think there are some doubts about the structure at United. Maybe doubts that would not preclude him going there, but Allegri has always had an Adriano Galliani behind him. He's always had a Fabio Paratici or Beppe Marotta behind him. Strong sporting directors. And one of the lines he said was that, you know, when there is no structure, there's chaos. And I felt that before.
Damn. He's and a philosopher
was,
too.
That was when there was Barbara Berlusconi and Adriano right. Galliani at Milan, and that right. was kind of precipitated his downfall there. So I think there is, I think, well, certainly people around him feel that the structure needs to be absolutely right. And one of the things he said again was that he wants to get this choice right because it's a big step in his career, whether he stays in Italy or goes somewhere else. And with the results that he's had over the last 8 years, he doesn't want to go and, you know, find himself in a position where it tarnishes his reputation.
Right.
How is his English coming on?
Well, in the two-hour conversation, he didn't speak a word of English, right. But he is he is doing English lessons in Milan. He says that his speaking is okay. His reading is very good. Sometimes he needs someone by him to help him with the listening, particularly if people speak quickly. But yeah, I mean, I think the intention is there to keep improving his English, although I don't think England necessarily is the absolute nailed on next destination.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you've been very measured, but what's your sensation? Where do you think he'll be next season?
One of the things that I came away from that interview with was I felt if Pep were to leave Manchester City,
right?
Watch this space.
I see. Before we finish, perhaps the biggest European news of all, Alan Pardew is the new Den Haag manager, and he's taking Chris Powell with him. Did you know about this?
No.
Yes.
So Den Haag are second bottom in the Eredivisie. They've only had 3 wins from 18 matches so far this season, but that, of course, would be an improvement for Alan Pardew, who famously, in his last managerial role, only had 1 win in 18 at West Brom, 1 win and a disastrous trip to Spain where the players ran away with the taxi.
Yeah.
But anyway, see, he's now taken over. Eredivisie is on the winter break at the moment. His first game back will be at home to, apologies for my pronunciation, Valvik, who are bottom of the Eredivisie.
They were also in Marbella, but I didn't hear of any incidents.
Okay.
Not this time. Obviously, Steve McLaren.
Yes.
Did quite well, at least for a short space of time, with 20 in Holland.
Yeah. But there are problems at Den Haag. The club has been torn apart by infighting. A senior member of the coaching staff had a fight with a player, and he was sacked by the club, and then the manager, Alfons Grunendijk, quit because of the lack of support from Den Haag's Chinese owner. And that's the seething cauldron that Alan Pardew has walked in. But I tell you what, if anyone's going to take that situation by the throat, slam it against the wall and lay down the law, it's King Pards.
And a little dance as well, maybe.
Perhaps, you know, perhaps. Once they're in the cup final. Why not? As ever, we'll be covering that and all the other big European stories right here on the Tuesday edition of the Totally Football Show. Thanks for taking part today, Alvaro Romeo.
Thank you.
James Horncastle.
Pleasure.
Raphael Honigstein and Julien Laurent.
Merci.
And you, listener, for providing the most important element, your ears. We'll be back next week. Do have a great time till then.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Muddy Knees Media.